think for a moment about popular Christian art. Have you ever noticed how sappy most of it is? Call to mind pictures of Jesus you have seen, perhaps in churches, especially in Sunday school rooms or retreat centers. It's difficult to find a picture of Jesus that looks anything like what he must have really looked like. Even dismissing the ones that portray him with blue eyes and blonde highlights. Most pictures show him in a pristine white robe, perhaps with a tasteful dark red cloak or maybe navy blue. Even as a child, I thought Jesus was pretty special, most of all because his clothes never got dirty or even a little wrinkled. In today's gospel lesson, we are presented with three different views of Jesus, the Good Shepherd. Don't even try to combine these three views into one cohesive whole. It just won't work. What is Jesus saying about himself? We know it must be important because in the Gospel of John, whenever Jesus says, "Very truly I tell you," we need to sit up and pay attention. It's important. And in this passage, Jesus uses three images, gatekeeper, shepherd, and gate, to hint at who he is for believers and non-believers alike. The Gospel of John does not have parables as do Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Instead, we get these mysterious images that Jesus uses to describe himself. Bread, living water, light, gate. On the one hand, these images are familiar to us, and on the other hand, this and strange. They cannot be reduced to fixed meanings to satisfy our desires for exactness and neat categories. To do so would rob the gospel of those deep and complex images that we can enter into again and again. We can meet those images on a number of levels, nurture for our spiritual journey at many different stops along the road. The gospel lessons for the season of Easter, the great 50 days, follow a distinct pattern. The gospels for the first three Sundays present accounts of the resurrection, and the gospels for the last three Sundays present farewell discourse. Jesus' final words to the disciples at the Last Supper. And in between, on the fourth Sunday of Easter, today, we have Good Shepherd Sunday. As I thought about this pattern, I came to realize that in the pattern of the gospel readings, we have a reflection of life in the Christian community in the early church. The first followers of Jesus had to share the stories of the resurrection. But as time passed, doubts began to set in. Did we really see him, or did we just imagine it? Was it really him? I wasn't quite sure. Thought it was Jesus, but maybe it was just somebody who looked like him. And with the passage of time, also came questions about his return. Jesus said he was coming back. When? Do you think he's forgotten about us? He's not coming. It was just a dream. I think the stories of Jesus as the Good Shepherd are important to the church because they present the image of the one who cares for us, who does not forget us, who knows us and loves us. And with our hearts and minds and souls refreshed with this imagery, we can live into the rest of the Easter season. New ears and strengthened spirits, Jesus' final words to us. A word about shepherd and sheep, shepherds and sheep in the time of Jesus. If we were to see a flock of sheep and a shepherd coming down University Avenue, the shepherd would be herding the flock, guiding it from behind with the help of a sheepdog or two. So none of those sheep got over to the California Cafe or borders. In Jesus' time, as Psalm 23 says, the shepherd would lead the sheep. And sheepfolds, They were often rudimentary affairs, often built with a hut on one side and brush backed up around the other three sides with a gateless opening. Two or three shepherds might share a pen and take turns being the gate at night, lying across the opening to keep the sheep safely inside. And in the morning, a shepherd would come and call his sheep, and they would follow him out to pasture. This information helps us to better understand John's gospel. In the accounts of the shooting at Columbine High School in 1999, we can read of a teacher who stood in the hallway that morning. His name was Dave Sanders. He, along with a couple of students, directed over 100 students to safety away from the shooters. Dave Sanders was a gate in that hallway. Dave Sanders gave his life for those students, for he was shot in the back and bled to death before help could come. This took place on April 20th, 1999, it was also year A in the lectionary cycle, and the gospel for one of the Sundays following Columbine was the one we heard this morning. This information helps me to better understand Jesus' words in John's gospel. When we think of Dave Sanders or Jesus laying down his life for the sheep, it would be easy to focus on death, on the giving up of life. In the Gospel of John, Jesus will speak of giving his life for the sheep, not his sheep, but the sheep. And later in the 6th chapter of John's Gospel, Jesus will speak of giving his flesh for the life of. It's important to remember that both of these statements are inclusive ones, not limiting God's gift to a particular group of sheep, even if that group of sheep happens to be us. Jesus makes the love of God fully available by expressing that love in his death. And yet there is more to the story than that. I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. The word abundantly links all that shepherd talk to the whole biblical world of abundance. Think about it. The abundance of paradise itself, the garden filled with fruit trees of every kind, the story of manna in the wilderness sustaining God on their journey to a new land, the feeding of the 5,000 when the disciples gathered up 12 baskets of leftovers. For most people in Jesus' day, leftovers was an unknown concept. There was never enough to eat. Most people lived on the edge. That there were 12 baskets of leftovers was a picture of abundance beyond imagination. We have a different problem. We live in such an atmosphere of abundance that we might have trouble noticing it. After I had lived in Alaska for a year, I came to California. I had left St. Paul Island in mid-May with patches of snow still on the ground and ice still partially covering the little lakes and ponds. I remember going into the backyard at my mother's house and feeling as though I had stepped into a tropical rainforest. These bushes and plants that would have seemed ordinary to me 18 months earlier now seemed large and lush. I was able to see everything with new eyes. The streets seemed wider, the cars moved much faster, and even the sun seemed brighter. How could I have lived in that place for years and not seen its richness? Old Testament scholar Walter Brueggemann advocates a biblical theory of abundance in contrast to the ideology of scarcity. He reminds us that the entire Bible is about abundance, that the biblical witness points to the abundance that God provides. We live in a world where the gap between rich and poor, between scarcity and abundance, grows wider every day. Brueggemann says, on our own, we conclude that there is not enough to go around. We are going to run short of money, of love, of sex, of beer, of members, of years. So we seize the day and seize the goods, and for good measure, seize our neighbor's goods, because there's not enough to go around. And in the midst of our perceived deficit, God comes, giving bread in the wilderness, giving children in old age, giving homes to exiles, giving futures to those without hope, or joy to the dead. It dawns on us, he says, late rather than soon, that in the words of the psalm, you give them their food in due season, you open your hand and satisfy the desire of every living thing. Brueggemann goes on to remind us that we come from God and will at our God. If we trust in God's abundant love for us, if we can keep in mind our beginnings and our endings, we can live in the present, in the here and now, in a way that is shaped by God's abundant love. We know that the community of faith, as it grew from that small committed group that we heard about Acts this morning, would not be able to sustain the intensity of that experience of God's abundant love that they were experiencing. Yet we also know that many people have been able to experience glimpses of what such a life can be. Going on a retreat, participating in a work project, CEO, all of these can hint at what abundant life in community can be like. Perhaps that's the best we can do right now. Catch glimpses or have tastes of the abundant life in the midst of the fears of scarcity that surround us. Maybe that's why you're here this morning, to step out of the anxious life that surrounds us and join with those who share in the dream of God's abundance, who share in the hope that love is stronger than death, who want to trust that God's love and friendship is available, not beyond the grave, but here and now, and not just for us, but for all. About all this, if you feel less than confident about the path to take, here's some advice from preacher Barbara Brown Taylor. She says, so if sometimes you have trouble hearing the voice of your shepherd, be patient with yourself, because some days it sounds like a whistle and some days like a cluck. Some days like a love song and some days like a curse. It is not a voice that always speaks in words, much less in complete sentences, but it can usually be heard sometime between your getting up and your lying down each day, leading you beside still waters, restoring your soul. So this week, be resurrection life and listen for the voice of the Good Shepherd. See if you can spot some of the signs of abundance all around us. Resist the voice that tries to tell you there is not enough. Nurture your imagination and dream about what God's future might look like. Alleluia, Christ is risen.